Golf Smarter number 524, published on January 26, 2016. A Quiet Mind for Golf with head golf professional of Marin Country Club, Ken Doherty.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights to lower your score and raise your golf IQ. To hear the full interview and access hundreds of Golf Smarter episodes, sign up for premium access at golfsmarter.libsyn.com. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Kenny.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you again, Fred.
It's great to see you again, and I can see you. This is Blab. We are live on Blab, and we invite everybody to join us in the Golf Smarter Podcast to come to blab.im, search at Golf Smarter, and you too can join in the conversation. We're here speaking today with Ken Doherty, who is the head golf professional and head teaching professional?
I guess that's not my title, but...
Yeah, all right. Head golf professional at Marin Country Club in Marin County, California. And I share the 13th fairway with Ken.
That's right.
In my backyard, literally.
I hook the shot and it's in your backyard.
You are not the only one, dude. I have a lot of Titleist Pro V1 golf balls in my little my collection. I haven't bought a golf ball in 3 years.
I would think not.
And somebody gave me a box of golf balls for Christmas, you know, and I was like, thank you very much for this gift that you know I'm going to lose. I mean, that's a weird gift to buy for somebody that you know you're going to give it to someone and they're going to lose this gift.
Somebody mentioned that in the shop just the other day, how it's the strangest thing that when you lose a golf ball, somebody finds it, they don't return it. They don't bring it in the shop and say, hey, somebody lost a golf ball. It's kind of weird. And where else does that happen?
Right. And nobody has ever said, oh, did I break your window? No. And they have.
Yeah.
We lost a sky. I just had to replace a skylight. Just replaced a skylight. That was not cheap. That was not cheap.
No,
anyway,
I bet not.
So the beautiful thing is that while we're sitting here having our conversation, it's raining here in Northern California. And
yeah, it's about time.
It's about time. And hopefully it's not going to be over by Wednesday, right? It's going to last for a number of days, and hopefully we'll be getting, and I hear the snowing is that the skiing is great up in the mountains right now, and that's really really important. A buddy of mine is a water attorney here in California, and he was telling me that now the issue is the groundwater. They have sucked out so much of the groundwater over time that's got to replenish. It's not just getting the snow level up. So, you know, now this is going to take a while to get this all figured out.
And, yeah, short rain is not going to help us.
No, and we're not going to be the one who's going to figure it out because we're here to talk about golf. You got a article that you just wrote recently that I really wanted to focus on our conversation today. I thought was really interesting and a great topic for anybody who plays golf, who's trying to improve and trying to figure out what's going on with my game. You kind of have two titles meshed together, or a mashup, I guess is the current day term. It's a mashup of A Quiet Mind for Golf and I Hope I Don't Miss This Shot. But the way you titled it was A, I Hope Quiet, I Don't Miss This Shot. For golf,
the word mind was in there somewhere.
Something I can't. I'm reading it. And I can't even do it well. What does that mean? A quiet mind for golf.
Well, I think anybody who's played the game of golf understands that the mind is what separates many and what causes our golf to go astray. And I think that you could look at even anywhere from the tour to the beginner and find that happening. It happens. I think everyone on the tour has a great golf swing. They've got terrific moves. But what separates the ones that win more than others is what happens between their ears. And I think you saw that with Tiger Woods until he got in trouble in 2008. He was invincible, knew he was invincible, and everyone else knew it too. And he won because of that. And once he started to lose his confidence, his game hasn't been the same since. And I equate that with what happened with Mike Tyson got beat by Buster Douglas. and was never the same again. And he was invincible, unbeatable, and frightening. Not anymore.
Really? You'd think boxing is a big mental part of the game as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
I guess anything that you approach, if you walk on going, I'm the best one, you know, here.
Mm-hmm. You better know it and feel it. Otherwise, I think it's, you know, what I don't want somebody to do is go back to golf. You don't stand up on the tee and think negative thoughts. You've already missed the shot and you haven't even swung.
Right.
And, you know, that's very important.
It's really true that, you know, well, actually, let's forget about what's true. A minute ago, you said everybody's got a great golf swing on the tour, right? Are there two golf swings that are alike on the tour?
No. No. I mean, do they look alike? Sure. They look alike, but there's similarities. But for the most part, everyone is different somewhere.
Right.
They're all strong. They're all strong down right in the hitting zone. That's where they're all very, very good. Great feel, great position. And then what happens the rest of the way is up to what happens between their head, between their ears.
As a golf instructor, are you trying to get everybody to have the same swing? Or do you,
no.
How do you do that? How do you get, what is the ultimate goal here when you're teaching somebody, not trying to change what their swing looks like or feels like? What's the ultimate goal?
Well, it's different. If you're teaching people like I teach, which is the member golfer, it could be anywhere from a 2+2 handicap, but most of them are going to be somewhere between 15 and 30 handicap if you're lucky. So, you know, you're not teaching them to be a PGA pro. They just want to hit it further, hit it more consistent, and so, in some cases, just not be embarrassed. So you're trying to find that one or two things that can get them to do what they want to do. You're not taking the scalpel out and starting from scratch, not at that level. If you have a 16-year-old kid that says, hey, I want to be on the tour, well, now you're taking the scalpel out. You're trying to do as much as possible. But even that body type has something to do with what type of swing you have. If you're short, tall, heavy, long arms, short arms, it can change swings.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're just trying to get to a point where the club face is square at impact. Yes? Is that
sounds pretty easy, doesn't it?
Well, isn't that the goal?
Well,
to have the club face square.
Sure,
at impact?
Sure. That's the big part of it, because I want my people to be as in play.
So I'm sorry, that one kind of broke up.
Number one is ball contact. What I want is somebody to be able to keep it in play first. Ball contact's number one. Even though people come to you all the time about distance, ball contact's number one. You have to hit it in the middle of the face and be consistent. Then direction is number two, and then distance is number
and
three.
And none of those is consistency. And because everyone probably comes to you and says, I want to be more consistent. Yeah, yeah. And nobody actually realizes how consistent they actually are.
Yeah. Well, and consistency is relative too. And consistency, you know, the best players on the tour, consistency is lasering it at the flagstick every time and hitting it perfect. Where a 30 handicapper, consistency is making contact and being in play. So I have to find out what their game is all about and what their goal is before I can do anything. If they walk in and I assume that they're a one handicap, that lesson may not.
So number one would be contact. And that would be.
Yeah.
Where does that go? Is that body position? Is that the swing? What are the elements that create consistent contact?
The less, the better. And what I tell people is sometimes they'll take a backswing, and I call it a big production. Their elbows are flying and the wrists are moving all over. The club's flying everywhere. And it makes it impossible to be consistent. My favorite word in a golf swing is compact. I want it simple. Up, down, not a lot of movement. And very few people do that. They feel like the bigger they wind up and the more flailing they do, the farther it will go. Mm. And it simply isn't the case.
Okay. So then we get to contact. Let's... where do you like to keep the weight during the swing? Front foot, back foot, completely balanced. And there's so much conversation about this with different instructors on where they want you to keep your weight to make better contact. Where do you see that?
Well, I think, generally speaking, now, if I've got somebody that's got a really unorthodox swing and they're doing some things that are weight that are difficult, I may shift them to their right side, right at address. But normally, I want them to be pretty even at address. I equate this to throwing a ball. If you want to throw something, you're going to rear back on your right foot, or your back foot if you're left-handed, your back foot, and then you're going to move to your front foot. And I think the golf swing is very similar. You should be moving to the right a little bit and get on your right side and then move into your left. And those people that struggle, I hear a lot that they're trying to keep their head over the ball. And I think it's a big mistake. You have reverse pivots in that case. And I've seen more trouble when I hear that.
A little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. Now we're getting into a sway, which I know for me was a big problem. And so is sway not moving back and forth? What is that?
Well, no. I mean, if you take your hips and move them to the right and the left and your head stays still, now we're talking sway and slide and all that stuff.
Upper body.
I'm talking about the more upper body. I think your head at the start, your head should be to the left of the golf ball and to the right of your right inside right heel. Okay.
So
I'm
wait
talking
a minute.
About a right-handed golfer now.
Okay.
Right-handed golfer. There's a box there. There's a box between the back end of the ball, the back of the ball.
Okay.
And the inside of your right foot. So your head's slightly behind the ball. And that's where your head should be. And it should stay fairly close to that box. It shouldn't move much. It's okay if it moves a little bit right as you're taking a backswing, but you don't want to move to the left. And I do see that where you said a sway and a slide. Some people make the mistake by having their hips move to the right. Your hips should rotate a little bit. Your head and upper body is to the right. It's hard to explain by listening. You know, it's much easier to show that.
It's tough to do this in a conversation like this. I also have, for myself, I recognize that when I learned how to quiet my lower body and didn't have that sway going, a lot of the back pain disappeared as well. That was huge for me.
Well, it's going to limit your movement, which I like. I think the lower body should be much quieter. And if you see today's golf swings, their lower bodies, it seems, hardly move at all. It's incredible. And they can generate tremendous torque and clubhead speed by winding up their upper body. And the old school was the left heel came up on the backswing for a right-hander, and they moved off quite a bit. And that's
I see more mishits by people lifting their left foot on their backswing, more right-handed golfers picking up their left foot. So now you're talking about shoulder turn, not hip turn on your swing?
Well, the backswing, your shoulders are going to turn mostly, but your hips will turn slightly. I'm not saying they're not going to turn. They must turn a little bit. But I think so many people actually turn their hips and shoulders the same amount. And the hips shouldn't even be half as much. Or just to half, maybe, that the shoulders turn. If you're going to turn your shoulders to 45 degrees, then most of your hips...
Have you noticed, have you witnessed, seen a lot of your students too much backswing? They go way too far back? Right. And then all of a sudden, they've got their elbows all creaked up, and they're all tied up in a knot, right?
Yeah. And you're going to see a couple of people like, you know, the Bubba Watsons and of course John Daly did it famously. You know, if you come there and show me that you can play like them, well, then you can keep it. But most people that go too far are really out of position. They're not in the right weight position. Their club is probably offline, and good luck trying to manipulate that back into the same or correct place. And certainly not the same place every time.
All right. See, we talked about contact. And we are going to get back to that mental game about mind for golf. But you talked this 1, 2, 3, the elements that are so important for a consistent golf swing. Second one, you had direction. All right. Now, is this the direction the ball's going or the direction you're facing at setup? Okay.
The ball goes. Yeah, direction of the ball. You want to keep it in play. Off the tee, your main objective is to keep it in play. You're not going to laser it down the middle every time, but you can't knock it out of bounds. You can't reload. You can't be pulling a ball out of your pocket before the ball lands because you know it's out of bounds. You're already hitting three off the tee. So to me, keeping it in play in the long game and being effective in the short game is where you need to work on. To hit it straight every time is not going to happen. And to hit it 300 yards is not going to happen. You just need to play smart and keep it in play, and your score will be better. And I proved this, and I said this on a previous podcast. I started thinking about the yardage and what it takes, and these people that couldn't break 100 and they hit it long ways, but all over the place. So I hit my pitching wedge somewhere around 135 yards. And I'm thinking, okay, if I do that on par four, three pitching wedge gets me to the green. I'll use that pitching wedge to putt. I'll blade it. Pitching wedge is not going to be too far away, hopefully 20, 25, 30 feet at the most. And I can two putt in most cases. So it's possible that I could bogey every single hole and shoot 90 and have only a pitching wedge in my hand the entire round. And the very first time I went out, I shot 45 in 9 holes, pitching wedge only. In fact, I had a 6-footer on the first hole and I missed it. But I mean, I could have made par, and I made par in another hole. But I knew that, but I wanted to be able to tell people that I did it and prove to them that distance is so far down the line of importance. If you keep it in play, then distance can matter a lot.
So why is the marketing only towards distance? It just seems like all the manufacturers of balls. Yeah, why?
It's what sells. Yeah, the long ball sells. The home run, yeah, the three-pointer.
But there's something about seeing a ball in flight. I don't care what kind of ball it is. There's something about seeing it in flight. There's kind of like, wow.
Oh, yeah. You go to the range and you see these young guys and they're just swinging for the fences. And that's all they want to do is prove that they can hit a long way or show somebody that they can hit a long way. You know, I'll sit there and watch if I see somebody who's consistent and they're hitting it very crisply and hitting the flag stick. To me, that's what turns me on, gets my juices flowing. For me to see somebody knock right. a long way, I see that all day. You know, hit it a long way straight as an arrow, then I'm interested. But not just a long way.
Sorry, got it so excited. Yeah. All of a sudden, we're flying there all over Ken's house.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are – it's hard to convince people that it's – you know, all you have to do is bogey every hole, right? And you shot 90. And a lot of people can never break 90. And now we get back to the mindset.
That's right.
So yeah, the whole idea of just going too far, too far, too far. Well, you can never go too far on the, you know, but that's what they're trying to sell to you. You're going to get farther. You're going to get farther. But we've talked about this a lot on the podcast. It's not how far, it's how close.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
It's that second shot. Get yourself in the fairway.
That's right.
Keep talking about.
If you can hit it straight, we'll talk about distance. And that's what I'm going to tell you. I can't tell you. There was a gentleman that just a week ago came to me, and he's aging and talked about his distance and so on. And I took one look at his swing and I asked him how consistent he was. And he sheepishly smiled and said, not that consistent. I said, well, once you start let's fix your swing a little bit, get the ball closer to the middle of the face more consistently, then we'll talk about what we need to do.
I know one of the things that you have in a private country club is you have your own pro shop there. So you're selling and fit. You're doing a lot of fittings. Hopefully you're doing a lot of fittings and you're selling a lot of gear. You're selling a lot of clubs. Are you seeing the same people they want the newest, they want every 6 months, they want the newest driver, they want the newest irons, thinking it's going to change their game?
There's always a segment that wants the latest and greatest. As much as I want to sell clubs and the manufacturers want to, I think technology probably doesn't pass clubs by for probably 4 or 5 years. That's what I think. Now, that doesn't mean that the next club coming out isn't going to be better for you. You never know. But there's also people that hit their old driver just as far as anything that we have out there. Certainly the Czech technology is better, but for whatever reason, whether it be confidence or their particular swing, who knows, it doesn't always mean the newer club goes further. But there is a group of people that just have to have the latest. Sometimes it helps.
Well, if it helps, and then we're back into the mindset.
Oh, there's no question.
People blame their putter for them being a poor putter. Yeah, I can see you're looking like, oh my God, most people. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, okay. Talking about putter sales, as of this week, January 1st, 2016, we were talking about this in the podcast recently. You can no longer sell, you can sell the long putters, the belly putters. You can't use them in tournament play, or you can use them, but you can't.
Well, you can use them, but you can't anchor them. Yes.
So there's ways to anchor it, but you just can't do it like against your chest. Like you can anchor it. Can you anchor it up against your arm and grip your arm?
Yes.
That's legal.
Yes. I believe it is. I believe it is something that Bernard Langhart used to do for a long time. I think, if I'm interpreting the rule correctly, it's anchoring it against your body.
And does anybody paying attention to that have you witnessed so far? Or
I have no, but there's only one gentleman at my club that said he might have trouble with it, but everyone else has already changed. In fact, this gentleman, obviously it's just a couple of years into the new year. Yeah. I don't know
what
he's
playing
done.
It. It's been raining.
At a club level, it's very, yeah, I have a hard time at the club level, pushing that too hard. I'm not in the business of running PGA tournaments or making money as a pro. I'm into having a happy member and I want them to enjoy their round. Now, if he ever played in a men's club, you know, club championship or a men's event like that, well, he'd have to conform. Okay. He'd have to make sure that he played by the rules. But for somebody to just go out and force them and have a problem with their guys, I'm probably going to back that gentleman. I just don't see it being, especially that issue. I just don't think that particular issue, and maybe I'm wrong, but it's just my whole idea around a private country club is to make everybody happy and enjoy their day and want to come back. And why would I make it difficult or have a guy tell me if I can't use some sort of a putter like this, I can't putt. I just can't. I get the yips so bad, I'll quit. I never want to hear that.
What do you think the percentage of people at your club do use the extended or long putters? I'm not sure what the exact industry term is.
I don't know if it's even quantifiable now. I don't remember the last person I saw. If there's one or two out there, I don't know them. I don't play or seen them play. They left quickly. Those clubs,
and you don't have
fast.
Manufacturers coming, going, "Hey, we have a new belly putter. We have a new long putter that you got to check out." No one's walking in the door with that.
Well, I guess you call it the buddy putter. They've got I lost the word. The
face balance.
The balance putter there.
Heel toe balance. No. Okay.
No, it's weighted differently. Anyways, it's about 37, 38 inches long. It's not as long as the other ones. And I've even got one. They're long enough and weighted so that it does take your hands out of it and you can do some different things with it, but they're not so long to where you're going to have to
anchor
it against your
body.
Did you
ever get a letter or an email or anything from the USGA explaining the rule and why they did it?
I don't know if we were ever sent at the club level, anything like that. It was announced, certainly.
Back in 2012.
So we saw it that way.
I think it was like at the end of 2012. It was a long time ago.
Well, I knew it was a couple of years ago, but I didn't realize it was that long. Yeah. Well, and that's a good idea. I like that they give people a chance to change and move into it. And it's probably why I don't see anybody with it or any complaints, because they've known it for a long time.
Back to the mental part of this game, this wonderful game that drives us crazy. Is it all facets of the game that the mental part come into play, or are like mostly once you get the ball near the green, or is it the tee? I guess it is all.
It's every single swing that you'll make.
And it can
every
snowball
single
too.
Swing. and the swing. Well, yeah, and it's every swing, but maybe you have confidence in your driver. So the mind's a little quieter with your driver, but your putting stinks, so your mind's going crazy. So I think it's there all the time, but I think it's more alive, if you will, in the places that you're struggling or those days you're struggling. Yeah.
I want to come back to the article now about a quiet mind for golf, and you have some recommendations on what people can do to better prepare themselves for the stress that a game provides. It's not work, folks. It's a game. But the stress that comes through it. So let's see if we can go over these points that you're making. And the first one you have is never think backwards on the golf course. I'm not sure what that means.
If you're thinking of your backswing, I believe you're in for a long day. I always feel that thinking forward, and I guess you could also think of, hey, if you just had a bad hole, it's probably not good to keep thinking about that too. But I'm more referring to the swing itself. I think that you should be picking a target and swinging at the target. If you want to think of anything, I don't mind if you think of beyond the ball. Like if you want to think of taking a divot beyond the ball or pick a spot out in front, so on. But I personally pick out a target, and it does a couple things for me. One, it takes all that stuff off my mind. I'm not thinking, don't hit it out of bounds, don't hit it in the water, don't do this, don't do that, or I hope I don't. I'm not thinking about my golf swing. I am honing in on that particular target. It can be a tree limb. It can be the edge of a house. It can be the tower up on the side of a hill, whatever's in line with where you're going. And I'm going to be able to swing at that authoritatively and with some confidence instead of swinging defensively, which a lot of people do. They swing defensively, negatively, rather than thinking of something positive and swinging at it. And you may not hit it straight at that target all the time, but I guarantee you, if you are truly relaxed and thinking of that target and swinging at that target, you will narrow your misses. It will definitely come in. And it could be the difference between why you're knocking it out of bounds and in the water and why you're now in the rough or the fairway.
So you're an advocate of target golf.
No question about it. I don't want your mind on your golf swing. If it is, I want it on forward stuff. Like I said, maybe making sure that your divot is beyond the ball. Some people do that. Or if they're chipping, sometimes they pick a spot out in front, make sure their club stays down on the grass beyond the ball, 2 or 3 inches, instead of trying to lift the ball. That's what I generally see in chips and pitches. But generally forward, never think of, am I going inside? Leave that for the range.
So, and when you're thinking target, are we talking about a specific spot on the course? Are you looking up into the trees? Are you looking at we'll take this at the tee box right now, but give me an example of how you're instructing somebody on target golf, what you want them to be focused on.
I'm first of all looking at the direction I want to go, and then I'm picking something up high. I want it to be higher than my target. I don't know if that's 20, 30 yards. It could be, again, it could be up on the side of a hill in the distance, which could be quite a bit high, but it's not too high for your eye line. And I want to swing and concentrate on that image. So when I had somebody a long time ago, do you see the ball when you hit it? And I had to think for a second, and I said, you know what? I'm looking at it, but I don't see it, because what I see is my target. So if it's the corner window of that house up on the hill, then I'm burning that image in my head. And when I look down to the ball, I start my swing and all I see is that corner window and that picture. And I'm swinging at that in my mind. And so I don't really see the ball. I see the picture. And I don't know if you understand that.
Yeah.
I'm not moving my head. You know, the big thing is if you're looking at the ball, it's more like, are you moving your head? Right. And I'm not moving my head. I've just got that picture in my head.
Right.
And again, it keeps the negative stuff away.
Well, yeah. Especially, on the last couple holes, the last couple shots, it's starting to ruminate in your head that this has been going on. What am I doing wrong? So then you start trying to tweak your swing, and that's the kiss of death.
Oh, yeah. Again, there's your quiet mind. You're starting to tweak your swing. Your mind's starting to move, thinking it's too much. And you can't do it on the golf course.
No, what cracks me up is the guys who tweak their swing during the round are like, they don't practice. They don't take lessons. They watch a lot of TV and YouTube videos, and they go out there
which
and
which creates more lessons for me.
but then they're also like, okay, I knew what I did wrong that time. How do you know what you did wrong? Are you watching? Oh, I lifted my head.
Yeah, that's the famous one. I do believe this, that if you take a few lessons, I always try to find that one or two things that makes the big difference in their golf swing. When you leave a lesson, you're going to know what you do and how to get out of it. And my dad is a PGA pro as well, retired. But when I was a kid, he used to come off the golf course at a private club, and I'd certainly ask him how he played. And every once in a while, he said he had to manufacture a swing. And at the time, I just thought, okay, I don't know, maybe he didn't play well. But now I understand what he meant. He didn't have his swing or his game, but he was able to make it back to the clubhouse without bleeding to death. You know, he didn't shoot a 72, but he shot 77, and he didn't shoot 90, which I think most people that play golf, once they get off the rails, they're off. And I think that everybody needs to know what that one or two things is that makes you tick. You might not feel great, but you have an idea of what to work on rather than reaching in the grab bag and saying, I'll try this. Okay, that didn't work. I'll try that. That didn't work. And then this. And before you know it, you don't know what's right and wrong. You need to know exactly what your swing does. I know when my swing, the ball tells me. If I see a ball go in a certain direction, I know what I'm doing. I may not feel that I'm doing it, but I know I'm doing it because the ball is telling me that. That's how I can fix mine. And I have a couple of different swing thoughts or ways of getting out of it. Now I'm trying to quiet my mind, certainly, but I'm not grabbing into thin air and trying to find things or stiff. I think people get really stiff and afraid when they struggle out there. They get fast, short, and stressed. And that's the worst thing you can do. You want to be relaxed and free. And it may not make sense, like, oh my God, I'm going to be loose and free. That means the ball's going to be loose and free. No, actually, you allow your swing to happen rather than try to force something.
Mm-hmm. Tension in the shoulders. Take a breath. Relax. Let it go.
It's because you care, Fred. And it may sound funny, but if you care, you'll most likely struggle a little bit more. If you just say, hey, I don't care. It's like throwing a second ball down. You throw a second ball down on the tee. How many times do we hit that good? A second putt from 10 feet or 6 feet or whatever it is. How many times do we hit that good or it goes in? It's because we don't care. We're relaxed. It doesn't count. Consequences is what makes us go crazy.
Yeah. Well, my playing partner, John, always likes to call it, you're a second swing All-American.
Absolutely. Very good.
So your second point then, I find interesting. We've talked about it numerous times, but I just think it's such an important thing to remind people of, and that would be play situational golf on the range. Well, first of all, that's if you're practicing on the range, not warming up, and there is a big difference there too.
There's a big difference. Most people just warm up. They get there before they play. 5, 10 minutes, maybe even 15. That's more warm up. That's exercise. Practicing is going to the range some afternoon when you're not playing and you're spending a good hour or so and you're working on things. That's practice. And if you want to work on situational golf, and that's, again, you want to put yourself or practice as much as possible of what's going to happen on that golf course. Well, when you're on the range, there's no consequences. So you're free. So I want you on the range to mentally put yourself in plays. And we've all done this. This putt is to win the Masters or the US Open or whatever it is. And I think that you need to do those things. You need to pick a target, put yourself on the 18th hole, your partner's out of the hole or whatever it may be. And you have to make yourself and feel the same stress as you do on the golf course. Because the more attuned you are to that and familiar with it, the better off you'll be. So you don't want to just go out and hit freely and not make it count. I think Jack Nicklaus actually said that he's never hit a shot, even at the range, that didn't count.
Wow. That's an important thing to remember. Wow, make them all count. I when I'm on the practice putting green, even before a round, I'll try to take my playing partner and say, come on, let's have a little competition here of, you know, I don't care if you get it in the hole or not. Closest to the hole will win for me if you get it, and that's the bonus. But just having that competition is...
I love it.
Yeah, it's just a better way to go ahead and get warmed up.
It's because you have to. There are possible consequences to you losing. It could be a buck. It could be just because he gets to rub it in your face. Who knows? Otherwise, you just don't want to lose. But there are some consequences. And again, the more you do that, the more familiar you are of how you feel, and maybe you can get through it on the golf course.
Yeah, yeah. Your final point is have a better self-image. Talk about
that.
Yeah,
I've seen a few people beat themselves up. This goes beyond golf. It could be for anything. And you're not going to be successful if you stand up there and think, well, I'm going to miss this. My swing stinks, or I'm a terrible putter. I think you got to work on that part of it too. And you got to like yourself a little bit more and like your golf swing and work on it. Stay positive. You have to stay away from the negative. Because, you know, you don't want to stand up in the tee and already have missed the shot before you swung, already lost to Fred Green before you've even teed it up against him. You know what I mean? You've got to, and we just talked about that in the beginning of the podcast, is how, you know, if the Mike Tysons of the world and Tigers stood up and knew they were going to win, they knew they were going to make that putt, they knew they were going to knock that guy out. And sure enough, and when that stuff disappeared, they didn't do it as often.
Yeah. That was such a fun time when Tiger was at his best, and every player on the tour was clearly intimidated and talked about it. I mean, so they defeated themselves. No one was going, you know what? I've got him in my back pocket. It was the other
There's
way
no
around.
Question about it. You didn't see other players bow up to him and say, I can take him down, because they knew they couldn't. And he had that air about himself. And not only that, is he came through. I mean, how many times, whether it be Bay Hill with a 20-foot slider downhill, or, you know, a shot here, and he continued to make shots, which is what made me and many other people watch every time he was on, because every time he had to have a shot, he did it. Who does that? I've never seen it before. And, you know, we might say years from now that we're very lucky that we were able to witness it, because you might not see it again.
Oh, yeah. It seems like golf is a once-in-a-generation superstar, you know. But it's also, you know, there's a couple times in our lifetime that we've witnessed things like that, which were Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Muhammad Ali, right? Just a couple times. And right now, Steph Curry. I mean, the Warriors are just running away with it all. It's unbelievable. Yeah. So give me your predictions for 2016 PGA Tour. What do you think Jordan Spieth is going to be able to, how much of his year do you think he can repeat?
Well, I believe it or not, I don't watch a whole lot of golf.
Because you
will
play
I
golf.
Watch
Yay!
Well, yeah. I wish I played that too. I watch the majors. I watch some of the big ones.
Right.
But Jordan Spieth is not going away. I do believe he's going to have a great career. He seems to have the mindset, certainly got the swing at such a young age. You can see it in his interviews. You can see it in his body language. He's not a short timer here. So I think he's going to have another great year.
And the whole youth movement going on that we had in 2015, like all these superstars in their 20s. That's really rare it's rare for the PGA Tour though, isn't it? Have that many guys?
20, 30 years ago, you peaked in your 30s. Everybody that was winning was in their mid, late 30s, early 40s. Now these young kids, they're coming in their 20s and winning. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Jordan, what is it, 22, 23 this past year? It was amazing. Well, Kent, happy New Year. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. Really enjoyed having you on. Always, you know, you and I love to just sit around and talk about golf a lot. So I really appreciate that you agree to come on the podcast too to do it.
Well, it was a pleasure, Fred. Nice to see you again, and Happy New Year to you too.
So if you're a longtime listener to Golf Smarter, you know that Ken's been with us before, and in previous interviews with him, He's come into my studio for a sit-down chat, but this time we were live on Blab so that you can be part of the conversation. Please keep your eyes open for announcements of upcoming Golf Smarter podcast episodes. I can't always get that together, but I'll try to email you with the updates when they are scheduled. If you're not on our email list, please click the subscribe button at the bottom of the page when you select Hey Fred on the homepage of Golf Smarter. That was confusing to me. Okay, so on our homepage at golfsmarter.com, there's a Hey Fred tab at the very top. When you click on that and go to the Hey Fred page, you can send me an email, and at the bottom, you can click to subscribe to our email list. I hope that makes more sense to you. I'm trying to get it figured out in my own head. Now, the best places to watch for announcements is on the free Golf Smarter app, which is available for Android at the Google Play Store or at Amazon. And of course, it's available for iOS in iTunes. So other places beyond the Golf Smarter app, of course, is golfsmarter.com, where you can actually watch the event without having to log into Blab. I have it set up now that we can embed the conversation, and it'll be right at golfsmarter.com. And if you want to join in the conversation on Blab, you can follow at Golf Smarter on Blab or Twitter. You'll get the announcements there. And of course, we have a Facebook page as well, which we keep that updated as best I can. Now, over the past few months, you've been getting a sense of what a complete Golf Smarter episode is like. Hopefully, you've been enjoying hearing everything from start to finish. But starting next week, I've been telling you this for 2 months, you'll only get to hear a portion of the show that, since I usually edit down the conversation to a half or even a quarter of what the premium access subscribers get to hear. Subscriptions are only 1 month at a time, so you can cancel whenever you'd like. But I hope that you'll choose the option to support us by joining Golf Smarter Premium. With your subscription, you also gain access to our complete archives of helpful game improvement interviews from the last 10 years. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future guests, I'd love to hear from you. Please, remember we talked about that Hey Fred button? There it is. Hey Fred at golfsmarter.com.